Welcome to the UBS Advisor Experience. This is a podcast series with advisors who have recently joined UBS from across the industry. In candid conversations, they will each share their experiences about moving to UBS, what it was like for them, what it was like for their team, and their clients. You'll get to hear firsthand about the resources and support at UBS that can help take your business to the next level. I'm your host, Emily De La Reguera. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Emily De La Reguera, and I am so excited today to be joined by my colleague, Scott Fitzenreiter. Scott joined us in 2022 with his team from Merrill Lynch, Bank of America. And Scott is really unique, has a great perspective to bring to many of you listening today. He actually has quite a unique background. He was a military officer for part of his career and then decided to get into financial services, joined Merrill Lynch Bank of America, and then again, as I mentioned, only recently in 2022, joined us here at UBS. And so, Scott, welcome to the podcast today. It's so good to be with you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, where are you today, Scott? Because I know you're most of the time or part of the time based in Hilton Head, South Carolina, which I have to tell you, I'm very jealous of. My entire family is in Hilton Head right now on vacation, and somehow I got left behind in California, although you shouldn't feel too sorry for me. I'm going to Hawaii in a week, so I'm getting my own vacation separate from the family. But are you in Hilton Head these days, or are you back in the DC, Maryland area where your team is predominantly based?
Today, I am currently in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, and it is sunny and warm and a little bit of a breeze. I will be in my branch office, which is Washington, D.C., actually on Monday of next week. So I am in sunny South Carolina.
Very nice. Well, sounds like the Hilton Head weather is quite nice. It is desert-like temperatures out here in California, so I'm a little envious. I'm not going to lie.
Well, California's pretty nice too, so I don't think we're going to get much pity there.
That's true. It is nice for like 9 months of the year, except from June to September. So I'm living in the heat.
Right.
Well, good. Welcome. We're so happy to have you here. You and I have had a few conversations in the past, and I've been really looking forward to recording this podcast with you because candidly, your team and you have a really unique background, not from the standpoint of that you came from Merrill. We have many advisors across the country who have joined us from Merrill Bank of America, but you in particular have a very unique background between your military background, then joining Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and then moving over to UBS. And then on top of that, your team is really unique from the standpoint that not only is it a private wealth focused team, but you've got almost a 10-person team, nine of which I think are in private wealth management. And it's been interesting to see there's only a very few teams across the country where you have a combination of advisors who are private wealth and wealth management working together. And so I think the value and perspective that you're going to bring to our podcast today will actually be very special for some of our listeners.
I'm excited to share the story.
Terrific. Well, then let's just jump in. So for the benefit of our listeners, tell me just a little bit about the structure of you and your team.
Well, our team right now currently has, on the private wealth side, has nine people on the team. There are four advisors currently. We have two relationship managers and three administrative support staff. And interestingly, the two relationship managers are just exceptionally talented working moms, and they are going to be advisors starting January 1st. Both have the certified financial planner designation, as well as myself. I have that as well too. But it's the team started at Merrill Lynch in 1998 and has been together since then. Again, there's myself and one of the other advisors and one other advisor who retired probably about 5 years after the team got together. So we've been together for quite some time. We do have some unique capabilities, as we do have some pretty robust partnerships on the wealth management side. And as well, we have sports and entertainment accreditation for one of the advisors, and myself, I have an institutional consulting designation and accreditation as well too. So again, the team, the book of business is pretty mature. Again, I've just passed my 30th anniversary last month in the business. And so, and the other advisors as well too, we were at Merrill Lynch for quite some time and built some pretty strong relationships there, and really starting to do that as well here at UBS too.
Wow, that's a lot. I want to unpack a couple of things that you mentioned in here. So you've got the athletes and entertainer designation, as well as the institutional consulting designation. Did you have those at Merrill before you joined us, or is that something you took on when you joined us here at UBS?
Yeah, so we had those when we were at Merrill Lynch. And so I've had the institutional accreditation for probably, I'm going to say, somewhere around 12 years or so. And the sports and entertainment accreditation for one of the other advisors is relatively new within the last few years.
And what have you found since moving over to UBS? What have you found between both of those designations as differences, positive or negative? What have been some of the differences in those designations here at UBS versus what you had at Merrill Lynch in terms of being able to access different types of clients, resources that each firm has to be able to support that? What's that situation story been like for your team?
Yeah, it's been really great. And I'll speak more on the institutional side, then a little bit less on the sports and entertainment side, because one of the other advisors really heads that, and he would be more appropriate to speak in depth on that. But on the institutional side, UBS is built more for that purpose than Merrill Lynch or Bank of America was, just from a pricing perspective, investment platform, and ease of getting things moving along with the institutions. On the Merrill perspective, so in that regard, it's been a much better experience.
Terrific. We have a few institutional consulting teams across the country here at UBS, but I would tell you that the majority of them were lifers here at UBS. So it's interesting, again, to hear that perspective of somebody who's joined us from another firm with the institutional consulting designation and how that's been different and more positive here at UBS. So thank you for sharing that.
Certainly.
So I'm curious, listen, you run a phenomenal team. You and your partners, I should say, run a phenomenal team. And you've been an incredible addition to the UBS family. But as you were going through the process of leaving Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, and considering which firm to join, I'm sure you had your pick of many different firms who were coming after you because of how talented you and your teammates are. How did you end up deciding to come to UBS out of all of those options? And maybe in addition to that, what prompted you to even consider leaving Merrill?
So yeah, so that's a pretty robust question in itself as well too. So first, I guess, is why do you leave a firm that you've been at for 28 years? And, you know, I guess it really for me, it goes back to why did I join the firm 30 years ago in 1994? And leading the military after serving for 9 years on active duty, the appeal to the industry itself and wealth management and being an advisor was, one is you're helping people, but you're not sitting on a punching a clock. You're not, you know, said being dictated, oh, here's how much money you can make and here are the things that you can do with your career. And that was appealing to the entrepreneurship of the business was really appealing to me. And that was one of the reasons that I really started looking. And at the time, Merrill Lynch had a reputation across the industry as having one of the best training programs. So I was an infantry officer in the Army. I didn't study finance in college. And so having some baseline training in what the financial markets were and actually how to be a financial advisor was important to me. And it ended up working out well. And people said, well, you can do your training there. And if you decide you want to do something else or go somewhere else after that, you know, stay there 2 years and do what you're going to do. And frankly, the culture at Merrill Lynch, it stayed like that. It was very entrepreneurial for a long time until the bank bought Merrill Lynch. And then the culture started to change and it changed slowly. And then in the last couple of years, it changed dramatically to where the reasons that I went to Merrill Lynch or the reasons I got in the business in the first place were no longer valid. And so that was a time where myself and my partner started to look around, kick tires, ask questions, started taking meetings. And you know, for the many years, I never took a meeting with a competing firm. And we started talking to people. And one of the things that you find out is you don't know what you don't know. So we talked to a number of different firms. And then when we talked to UBS, actually a year before we actually decided to make a move. And then probably I'd say 9 months after the first conversation, the manager, UBS, my current manager, UBS, came back and she wanted to have another conversation. And things look pretty good. And ultimately, it comes down to is the culture of the firm and the people. And the people make up an organization. And every person that you know we spoke with and met with was just first class. And it looked a lot like the culture looked a lot like Merrill did before it was bought out by Bank of America. So that was one of the reasons. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to really do an in-depth dig into UBS. And in doing that, we decided that it said, okay, as soon as we find something that we don't like, we're going to stop this process with UBS and just move on. And we kept going day after day after day when we really started doing some due diligence, saying, okay, what did we find out? Anything here that's a reason for us to put on the brakes? And every day, there was no reason to put on the brakes, and it kept going farther down the line until all of a sudden you're looking at each other and we're going, okay, we're going to do this. And that's really how we ended up choosing UBS, is really the people and the culture was what was really appealing.
I love that. And I couldn't feel more strongly about that response, because as somebody who has grown up at this firm and spent almost 13 years at this firm, with the exception of a quick year and a half that I stepped away and went to BlackRock, the culture and the people are exactly the reason that I came back to UBS and realized very quickly that UBS is a really special place. And so I'm happy to hear that you and your teammates feel the same way.
Yeah. We asked each other, I asked him this morning, you know, we had a team meeting and then told him I was going to be doing this podcast in the afternoon. I said, anybody have any thing that they want to add? Is everybody happy? And everybody's like, yes, we are. So.
Amen to that. I'm curious though, Scott, so you and your teammates spent quite a bit of time really going through the process and evaluating every single meeting that you had with UBS and your market executive that you met with many times. Can you just walk, for the benefit of our listeners, walk us through that process? Tell us a little bit about the process of what you did with your team in terms of those meetings, those introductions, those experiences at UBS as you were going through the process that really got you to feel that the culture and the people were a game changer and really the right fit for your clients and your team.
Yeah. So the initial meetings that were done with myself and two of the other partners. We had another partner who is younger on the team and had recently joined. And so we said, okay, it's just going to be the three of us. And we didn't tell anybody what we were doing other than the three of us, and our spouses knew we were exploring other things. And so it was really conversational and started asking questions. And you know, we have certain things that we do in our business. We run some investment portfolios, which are on the UBS platform, the PMP platform, where at Merrill Lynch it was called PIA, but same type of platform. And we manage quite a bit of assets on those platforms. And so this was a big component for us. And so technically and operationally, we had to find out, is this going to work? And is it going to transfer? And you know, we had a lot of trust, a lot of estate things going on with clients that either Bank of America Trust Company had their tentacles kind of stuck in some things. So there were a lot of different things that we had to find out. We started asking these questions. And frankly, the UBS management, the local management, as well as the market director, they were terrific. So they had connected us with former advisors, specifically Merrill advisors. And you know, what was the process like? What did they do to start getting the business transferred over? What did not move, right? Because there's always going to be something that may not move or a client that may not move. So the management was great in helping us get connected with all those folks. So we started having all those meetings, having all those calls, talking to UBS research people, talking to the operational people on the trading platform for PMP and all of that to make sure and say, okay, this is something that we need to continue. And once we had made the decision that said, okay, we've got enough information that we can get at least some of the other senior folks on the team, not the administrative staff just yet, but to start getting involved in some of those meetings, asking questions, because we needed everybody to be on board. So we moved with 10 people on our team, on our private wealth team, and we moved, brought 9 wealth management advisors. So between, you know, on that day, there were 19 people that walked out of that Merrill office into the UBS office. So it was a big move.
Well, I think that's probably partly a testament to UBS, but also probably equally as a testament to the caliber, reputation, and quality of you and your team, and what message that sent to the advisors in the Merrill office in DC that wanted to then move over because they saw people like you and your team, again, high quality, high caliber, really talented, leave and wanted to follow suit.
Yeah, no question. I mean, our team as a whole was the highest producing team in that office. And that was a big office. I mean, it had 150 advisors in the DC Merrill office.
Wow, that's substantial. So just coming back, Scott, to some of the decision-making criteria, I mean, for teams like yours who get approached by many different firms, when you were evaluating, I won't name names, but whatever firms you were evaluating at that time, UBS included, what were the things that you were specifically looking for that you felt that UBS catered to? Like, what was the decision-making criteria that you and your team used to evaluate UBS versus any other competitors that you may have been looking at?
Yeah. So when we started looking, we were looking at things. One is we wanted to make sure that we were going to go to a place that had some name recognition. And that was one that was high quality. We had made a decision at some point, probably a year or two before, that we were not going to be the RIA. And we had met with, you know, some recruiters that were talking about, you know, independent. And so we had made a decision that wasn't a good fit for us. And, you know, in the names, there were a couple other firms that, you know, were talking to us and really kind of putting the squeeze on pretty good, that ultimately we just determined that they looked just like Merrill did at the time that we were getting ready to leave. And frankly, UBS looked like Merrill did before it was taken over. And again, I talk about culture. I talk about it being entrepreneurial, having a management team that is looking out to say, how can I help you? And not necessarily being one that's going to try to get in the way to do business just to appease another manager managing up as opposed to taking care of the people. So anyway, so that was appealing. And the good news about that after, you know, after all is said and done, is that that's still the case. We still have a great management team that is looking to help us do the best thing for our clients. And it's refreshing.
That's fantastic. Well, I happen to know your market executive and the market director is in your market because we go way back, probably 13 years ago together, and you've got a phenomenal management team working with you. I am curious, though, when you were looking at the RIAs, many times we hear from financial advisors, particularly who are currently at wirehouse firms, contemplate the idea of moving to an RIA because they do feel like it may be more entrepreneurial. What did you find as you were evaluating the RIAs? What made you confident that the RIA was not the right move for you and your team?
I think part of it was financial, right? And so as advisors, a lot of our compensation, a lot of what we have is tied up in deferred compensation, right? And so, frankly, at the time I made the move, which was just about 2 years ago, I was 60 years old, a lot of assets tied up in deferred comp. To take that risk and leave that all on the table at Merrill, and I wasn't sure my wife was going to be comfortable with me doing that. Of course, if I didn't discuss that, any of that in detail, and she probably didn't know, but I'm sure if
I
did,
that's not a good strategy, Scott. That is never a good strategy.
He would not have been real thrilled with that. So that was part of it. And again, when you're making a move, or at least this was our perspective, when you're making a move like that, and you're going to take, and again, it's a big business. And again, a lot of claws, a lot of tentacles that the firm has in clients, you know, because they want to make the client, the firm's client, not the advisor client, is that, you know, you've got to go when you take the step and you make the move, you've got to be able to pick up the phone or you're going to a face-to-face meeting. And you've got to be able to look the client right in the eye and say, this is why I left. This is why it's good for you. And this is why it's going to be good for you going forward. And there are a number of reasons that we felt UBS was going to be a great place for not just the advisors currently, but for the next generation of advisors who are going to kind of move into this business and take our clients and continue on down the road.
That's fantastic. It sounds like clearly you had a really smart and thorough process in evaluating that. And really, I think more importantly, looking at the short-term versus long-term gain and opportunities that would come from the RIA versus moving to a different wirehouse and looking at truly where are the clients and the teammates going to be better served, not necessarily where the advisors today were going to take a bigger check or get short-term greater benefits.
Yes, no question. I mean, and that was really one of the things that we talked about, not just with our own team internally, again, who's, we've got some age staggering, you know, along the way to where, like I said, I think I'm 62. I think I'm the oldest by a year. And then I think our youngest person, she's probably, I think, 26. So there's opportunity for everybody in between. And then for our clients, I think that's a good thing for our clients and our clients' adult children who are eventually going to inherit. And so we've got some continuity. We've got a succession plan in place. And so we felt that UBS is a great place to do all that. And I still believe that. And again, I asked the team this morning and everybody's resounding yes.
So let's stay on that for a moment, because you brought up the next generation of clients just recently. And at the very beginning of this call, you brought up the comment about the next generation of financial advisors on your team, which I think, if I remember correctly, they're working moms, they're currently relationship managers, and as of January of next year, are going to become financial advisors. I know I'm going to stack questions right here, which is never a smart move because I don't want you to forget the questions, but it's a two-part question. One, why do you feel like at UBS that you've got a better ecosystem, better support system for the working moms who are going to be the next generation of financial advisors on your team? How do we bring in more of the next gen financial advisors who are going to look like the client demographics of the future, not the client demographics of the past?
Yeah. So great question. So I'm going to try to answer both of those in depth as best I can. And first, I'm going to talk about the two ladies that are going to be financial advisors in January. They are exceptional. They are exceptional human beings. They are exceptional professionals, and they groomed themselves. And so I go back 15, almost 20 years to where both of them were hired and brought in our team to where they were client service associates. Both had experience in the industry. And they are just go-getters. And it's one of those situations where at some point soon after they got accustomed and comfortable with our clients and you come out of your office and you're saying, hey, can you, and they'd look at you and they just go, hey, I got this. And so they're self-starters, self-motivated, hungry, want to always improve themselves. Again, both have the certified financial planner designation, both have, you know, raising two kids at home and taking care of clients, and clients love them. So with them, again, I'm hesitant to take any credit other than the fact to, you know, let them do what they needed to do and kind of help them grow professionally and give them the opportunity and give them an environment where they can excel and be whatever it is that they want to be. And that's really been the culture within our team. And the other advisors on the team at the time were the same way. We're like, hey, you want to be whatever it is you want to be, we're going to help you do it, or at least encourage you and help find the resources for you to do whatever you want to do. If it's on our team or not on our team, but we're going to help you do it. So that, again, I'm going to give the two of them 99.9% of the the credit, and that just because of who they are and what they do. So the ladies are exceptional, again, as I mentioned, professionally and just incredible human beings. And so the reason that we did not do this at Merrill and we decided to do it at UBS is there were a couple of things. The conversation with the managers at UBS was absolutely, they can do that. And so that's, again, one of the reasons why we end up at UBS. And again, I think the culture, you know, and the support for women advisors and women in the business is there. Again, you know, my market director is a woman who's got kids, and you know, these two ladies are working, got kids, and we've got another one of our administrative, and she's kind of moving into the relationship manager role, and she's a single mom raising a son and working and doing all those things. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure that we ended up in a place that was going to support all that. And so, and I think we have that.
That's amazing. And I think it's always so good for women in the business. As a female in the business myself, I feel immensely blessed at UBS to have phenomenal female role models doing bigger and better roles and being able to balance work and home and in a way that's really supportive to both of those priorities. And so I'm really happy to hear that your female associates, soon to be female financial advisors, are experiencing the same, because we can't get enough of them. They're such a good addition to teams in any number of capacities, right? They just bring a different skill set, and the best teams have those complementary skill sets across a number of different advisors. And so I'm glad to hear that you're getting that level of support for those females on your team, and especially having some role models, it sounds like, on the management team to kind of show them the way and lead by example.
Definitely.
Wonderful. So, I mean, it sounds like you're still very much, I know you joined in 2022. From the sounds of it, it sounds like you're still very much in the honeymoon phase, which is fantastic. But realistically, there are always surprises when we move firms. What have been some of the most pleasant surprises that you did not expect? I know you did a lot of homework before you joined, but I'm sure there were some surprises that you did not expect. What have been some of the most pleasant surprises you've encountered since joining UBS that you did not expect going into this?
Yeah, so the pleasant surprise is that most of the things that they told us that this is how it's going to be, that's actually how it is. So that's a huge pleasant surprise, having the opportunity to have the team grow beyond my career and the careers of two of my partners who are roughly close to the same age. And we've got this next generation of advisors and then some of the folks that are in the support roles right now. And hopefully they'll have an opportunity to move into relationship manager and potentially advisor. So all that's there. That's been a really pleasant surprise that there wasn't a big surprise that when we got here, it says, oh, well, this isn't what we thought it was going to be at all. That's not the case, because it is. So, you know, talking to different people around the firm and from us, at least, you know, most of the people on the advisor side are not lifers at UBS or, you know, whatever, they came from somewhere else. And so there's a common thread or a common bond between a lot of the advisors where everybody's got these different viewpoints of how different firms are and everything else. And I think that's healthy as a work environment, because you can always go to somebody and say, hey, you know, what'd you guys do at your firm? Or what'd you do at your firm? And, you know, how did you do this? And, you know, is there any way that we can make it better? And, the, you know, one really positive about UBS, and I tell this to my managers and I tell it to other folks that I talk to, is that UBS is always trying to get better, at least. And that's from my manager all the way up to Jason Chandler and beyond, is what can we do better? They're asking me, you know, what can we do better? How do we get better? And they listen, and they're not afraid to, if there's some, you know, something negative or bad news, to say, okay, I got that. And then we'll see if we can do anything about it. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that's one thing, is the culture is really good.
Oh, I think that totally answers the question, because candidly, anybody can promise you anything in the recruit process, but to see what's been promised come to life, which we have heard a few times in these podcasts, our listeners who are listening to this today have heard this a number of times from various teams, that it's not just the talk and the promises, it's about delivering on those. And that is candidly a surprise to a number of people, unfortunately so, but reality that holding up to your end of the bargain, or the firm holding up to their end of the bargain and delivering on what they say they will provide, is in fact a surprise. And I think that's a big difference at UBS. And to your point, leaning into those conversations, easy or hard, that builds trust, that builds confidence.
Oh, and I agree. And that's the essence of leadership, is trust. And you trust the people that you're leading, and that you've got to trust who you're reporting to. And I think if I wanted to pick up the phone and call a manager two or three levels higher than my immediate manager, they would not be offended. They would just say, oh, okay, yeah, sure, call him or call her, and that would be fine. You know, there's always a couple of sticking points where you need somebody to go to bat for you and other things like that. But that's, you know, you're in private wealth and you're doing those things, you're always going to be trying to do things, or at least things that are typically out of the box. And so you need help. You need ways to get around, you know, some of the maybe standard policies.
That's right. There's a great quote from the head of private wealth here in the US, John Matthews, who I'm sure you've spent some time with. He always says that one size fits one, not one size fits all, one size fits one. And it speaks to the customization of what our clients need, and that a cookie cutter approach does not fit for all. And so we've got to be flexible and customized to solving the unique needs of those clients and, by extension, those advisors.
And that was, again, one of the reasons why we really started to look elsewhere. And I would just say that at UBS, we have a great operational support team. We've got a great managerial team. And I asked the team again this morning, I'll say it again, are you happy? Answer is yes.
I love that. All right, last question, Scott, lightning round here. What is one piece of advice that you would give to a recruit, a potential recruit from another firm, if they're considering joining UBS?
Yeah, I go back to the point of, if you've never been anywhere else, then you don't know. Is you need to ask questions. You need to, if you're in this business, to do the right thing for clients and to be able to help clients, but also do it within the guidelines that the firm has as far as culture and policy. But you're able to do it and be entrepreneurial, is that your business is your business. And they're not going to, you know, there's more than one way to get things done. And if you have your way of getting things done and it fits in with the firm's policies and all the compliance rules, then they're going to say, hey, you know, go for it. And again, that thing, been at Merrill for 28 years, just really, they had blinders on and just said, okay, because they keep telling us that we're the best. But, and then you wake up one day and you're looking and like, man, I'm not really sure anymore. It just feels different. So that's when you went out, and again, UBS is a good fit. So if you want to be entrepreneurial, you want to do this business, and you want to have name recognition of a good, solid firm, UBS is a great place.
Well, folks, you heard it here. It's about culture. It's about people. It's about the ability to be entrepreneurial. And it's about the support system and mechanism around you. Scott, thank you so much for being here on the podcast with us today. It is always a pleasure to be with you. And today was no exception to that. I appreciate so much your guidance, your advice, hearing your experience. And I know our listeners will too. So thank you for being here. I hope you have a fantastic weekend down in Hilton Head with your family. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to all of our listeners for joining us in this open conversation. I hope you found it helpful as you continue to explore the possibilities here at UBS. To hear more stories from advisors who have recently joined UBS, you can visit our Financial Advisor Experience Hub at www.ubs.com/advisor recruiting. I also would encourage you to have a live consultation with advisors who have recently joined us from your current firm to answer additional questions you may have. To schedule a confidential consultation, visit our Financial Advisor Experience Hub again. That address is www.ubs.com/advisor recruiting. Have a great week, and until next time, your host, Emily.
The material presented in this podcast has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. It is intended to be educational in nature.
It is not an advertisement, nor is it a solicitation or any offer to buy or sell any financial instruments or to participate in any particular trading strategy, nor should it be viewed as such by the listener. UBS AG or its affiliates and its employees are not affiliated with any third-party speakers mentioned. None of UBS or its representatives is suggesting that the recipient or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all in response to this podcast. By accessing and listening to this podcast, the listener acknowledges and agrees with the intended purpose described here and disclaims any expectation or belief that the information constitutes investment advice or a solicitation of any kind. Any financial instruments or services described in this podcast may not be eligible for sale in all jurisdictions or to certain categories of investors. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct. They differ in material ways and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review the client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy. Copyright UBS 2023, all rights reserved. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member of FINRA and SIPC.